Thank you very much. I just want to start by saying thank you all for being here today. It is such an honor to be on such an accomplished panel of my peers. The work you guys have done is absolutely incredible. And I'm really excited to share some of my work with you all today as well. This project was a project that I did this past year. I actually took a break, a gap during my medical school time between my third and fourth years to really chase my dream of living abroad and exploring health, both through a public health lens, but also through an international lens. I'd like to acknowledge a few of my wonderful co-authors, collaborators, and mentors, some of which were able to join us today, including Dr. Arlene Calvo and my wonderful statistician, Morgan Hess-Holtz. Our work was supported by a parent grant. The National Cancer Institute funded my mentor at USC, Dr. Bays-Connie Garbinati, and Dr. Murphy, who did some exciting work using narrative in cervical cancer preventions in Latinas in Los Angeles. And then my project was funded by the Wright Foundation, and it was run through the Dean's Research Scholars Program, which is a program my medical school sponsors to promote students doing full-time research. I have no disclosures, and bioethical approval was sought both through my medical school and through local organizations within Panama. So why cervical cancer? This was a topic that really grabbed my attention because of the fact that this is essentially a preventable disease that continues to kill women on a global level. As you know, HPV is a required precursor for precancerous and cancerous lesions. And cervical cancer continues to be the fourth most common female cancer worldwide, with over 500,000 new cases every year and over 250,000 deaths. And unfortunately, the deaths are disproportionately occurring in less developed nations, including Latin America and the Caribbean, where cervical cancer kills more women than any other type of cancer. Although pap testing has brought down incidence and mortality in many parts of the world, unfortunately, in many countries, it has failed to impact these rates. The implementation of a PAP program requires extensive resources, lots of coordination, specialty trained professionals to actually read the slides. So because of this, there's a lot of challenges that have prevented PAP testing from reaching its full potential, which is why it's so exciting that we have the HPV vaccine. So this vaccine can prevent infection with two types of HPV that cause more than 70% of cervical cancers. And studies have shown that with 70% coverage, over a 10-year period, the vaccine has the potential to prevent over 1 million cases of invasive cervical cancer in the Latin American and Caribbean region alone. Panama is a small country in Central America that has had historically high rates of cervical cancer. A lot of the studies that actually elucidated the risk factors leading to cervical cancer, such as smoking, multiple sex partners, and actually HPV itself, were conducted and published out of Panama. And although those rates have come down a bit, and now breast cancer is the leading cancer killer among women in Panama, cervical cancer continues to rank second in both terms of incidence and mortality. HPV is also unfortunately prevalent in Panama. In a recent national study conducted through the Gorgas Institute by Drs. Pascal and Zaldivar, a sample of over 5,000 women aged 15 to 80 found that the HPV prevalence was 62% among the general population, even higher among teenage girls at 76% among 15 to 19-year-olds. And of all the participants, almost half had an infection with a high-risk HPV, and these are the strains that have been shown to lead directly to cervical cancer. So kind of putting these pieces together, the reason Panama was a perfect place for the project, we have high rates of cervical cancer, high rates of HPV, and most importantly, the HPV vaccine is being offered. Panama really is a world leader in many ways in this. Since 2008, they have incorporated the HPV vaccine into the National Vaccine Program and are offering it absolutely free of charge at a national level to all 10-year-old girls, which is kind of incredible. And the coverage rates have climbed steadily since implementation of the program. Most recently reported at 80.6% in 2012, and that's three-dose coverage, so for completing the entire series. To give you a bit of perspective, I believe the most recent estimates in the United States are somewhere around 37%, so Panama is really leading for the region in many ways. But what struck me about this was this vaccine has been in place for over 5 years now, and there really has been very little research about what the public perceptions of the vaccine are. And as a medical student, during my training so far, I've already encountered a lot of instances of this sort of anti-vaccine movement that has been occurring in our country. There's been a lot of controversy around this vaccine. And when I first learned that the HPV vaccine was being offered in Panama, I was excited. And then I thought about it a little bit more and I went, well, is there any controversy around this? How does the community actually feel about this vaccine? So I really wanted to explore this further and really give a voice to the community and see if there was controversy and it just wasn't really published about yet, or if this was something that was welcomed by the community. So my main methodology was a survey that was conducted verbally in person. It was recruited via convenience sample, grab sample, and waiting rooms through various clinics throughout Panama City, which was three different institutions. The Centro de Salud 24 de Diciembre is a public health center which is operated by MINSA, which is the Ministry of Health. Panama does have universal access to health care. They have the social security system, which covers about 80% of the population, MINSA, which covers anyone who does not qualify for the social security, and then there's a variety of private settings for those who can afford it. So we had a public health center represented, as well as two private health centers, including ANSEC Bella Vista, and ANSEC is their National Cancer Society, as well as APLAFA, which is a Planned Parenthood affiliate and functions very similar to what you would see Planned Parenthood in our country. The survey itself was a 54-item survey, a mix of multiple choice and short answer, and it was adapted from a Spanish survey that was created by my mentors as part of the NCI-funded project that I mentioned at the beginning. So this was a survey that covered a variety of topics, including cervical cancer, HPV, and the vaccine, and was originally designed for Spanish-speaking women in Los Angeles. So we pre-tested the survey and did some cultural adaptations among our study population, and then I personally administered this survey in Spanish and recorded the results. We included women aged 18 to 65 for two reasons. I wanted to include women who were recommended to receive Pap testing and were at risk for cervical cancer, but I also wanted to capture primarily the mothers and grandmothers of the daughters, the girls that were eligible for this vaccine. We excluded anyone who had a previous history of cervical cancer, and we did limit it to participants who were fluent in Spanish. We approached 375 women, and 345 of them agreed to participate for a response rate of 92%. To give you a snapshot of our participants, the majority were age 26 to 40, and the largest marital status that was represented was cohabitating, so unmarried but living with a partner. Somewhat low socioeconomic status, we did have about a third of our population that reported living below minimum wage for a combined monthly income. Just to give you some perspective, Panama is on the U.S. dollar, and at the time of this survey, the minimum wage was $400 per month. So 33% of our participants had entire families surviving on less than $400 per month. Almost half were not formally employed. The majority were born in Panama, and we had a significant portion that had less than a high school education. So HPV knowledge. One of our questions was simply, have you heard of human papillomavirus? And I was pleasantly surprised to see that over 90% of our participants had in fact heard of HPV, and 80% were able to identify sexual activity as the mode of transmission. Unfortunately, this dropped off significantly when we tried to make the connection between HPV and cervical cancer, and we found that only a little over 10% were aware that it was HPV that actually causes cervical cancer. As far as knowledge of prevention strategies, when asked how can a woman prevent an infection with HPV, you can see that there's a fairly significant portion, almost a quarter, that simply responded, I don't know. And although we did have a little over 50% reporting condoms correctly, it doesn't completely prevent HPV, but diminishes the risk significantly. Unfortunately, I like to see that quite a bit higher. Then the knowledge itself. So we asked if they had heard of the vaccine and found that only about 60% had heard of the HPV vaccine. And for me, this was a little shocking at first because I shared with you at the beginning that the coverage rates are over 80% currently. And this probably warrants a little bit of explanation and context for you all. The HPV vaccine is being delivered via two main avenues in Panama currently. It's being delivered through the public school system, and it's also being delivered through public health centers, both MINSA and the Social Security system. And just from personal experience, meeting with, you know, principals from some of the local schools, although ideally there is an attempt made to send permission slips home and get parental consent, it appears that this isn't always occurring, which is reflected in our data by the fact that we have 80% of girls vaccinated, but only 60% of our mothers that were interviewed were actually aware that the vaccine even existed. There was also very limited knowledge about where the vaccine was available. 55% had absolutely no idea. They didn't know it was available at either the schools or at the health centers. And then there was a little over a third that did know it was at health centers, and 12% were available, knew it was available at public schools. And as you can see, almost three quarters were completely unaware of how many doses were necessary, which is a critical point because this vaccine requires three doses for total efficacy. For me, the most exciting part of this research was really getting at the acceptability, which was my key research question. And we found that even though a lot of these women had never heard of this vaccine, after a very brief introduction, 95% reported that they would have their daughters vaccinated. And this was a hypothetical question: if you had a daughter, would you vaccinate her against HPV? We also took a look at women who specifically have daughters aged less than 10, so mothers that have daughters that will become eligible for the vaccine in the next 10 years, and it was even higher, with 98.1% reporting that they do plan to vaccinate their daughters in the future. And this was something that was really inspiring and exciting for me to see, especially after really kind of battling as a medical student, talking to families and seeing a lot of the resistance and controversy here, which is really tragic, from my opinion, that a lot of we have such low uptake of the vaccine here. And one thing that was really critical to this, and one of the, I think there are two large factors at play here. I think most importantly, Panama has a very strong culture around vaccines. And Panamanians, as a culture, love their vaccines, all vaccines, any vaccine. When we would talk to women about this, the ones that hadn't heard of it would hear about this vaccine, and they'd say, oh, well, my 10-year-old daughter can get it. How about my 15-year-old daughter? And how about my son? And how about me? And I'm going to bring my husband in, and can he get it too? And it was just so, they got really excited and wanted absolutely everyone they know to go out and get this vaccine. And I think that really speaks volumes about the strength not only of the Panamanian vaccination program, but also the trust that the community has invested in both the government and the vaccine program. We did have 17 participants who did report maybe or no to possibly vaccinating a daughter in the future. And among these, the most commonly cited reason was concerns about safety or side effects. We had four participants who didn't really want to explain, but just didn't want the vaccine. And then some less frequently reported barriers were concerned about the daughter being too young, I don't really know enough about the vaccine, concerned that it might promote sex, and then we had one participant who was concerned that her husband might oppose the vaccine. Again, this was another interesting point for me. I had expected that there might be some paternal resistance, and it really didn't appear to be a factor at all. If you compare these numbers proportionally to the reasons that are frequently cited in the literature for Americans for refusal of HPV vaccine, they're actually similarly represented. But that's proportion within those refusing the vaccine. And if you look at this, this was 5% of my population. So it was a the same concerns that we see in the United States, but on just a very, very much smaller scale. In summary, it seems that even though knowledge was limited, the acceptability of this vaccine was extremely high among Panamanian mothers, and there were some important knowledge gaps that we identified that we feel should be addressed in the community and could potentially even bring the coverage rate even higher than the 80% that it's already at. Because this tells us that if the mothers are not aware that it's there, there's even more possibility for improvement to perhaps cover that 20% that isn't quite being reached by the current efforts. Our most important gaps that we wanted to address were target population, availability of the vaccine, which sites are offering the vaccine, as well as the number of doses required to ensure that girls are getting all three doses. It seems that the school program really does a lot by removing some of the geographical, structural, and economic barriers. And even in the face of lack of knowledge, the acceptability was quite high here. And for me, as a future physician, it really emphasized the importance of promoting these and discussing these with patients. And I think I'm interested in going into medicine pediatrics, which is a combined specialty that does both adult and pediatric medicine. And I know every single child that I see, I will always be sure to counsel the parents about vaccines, because this is such an enormous public health opportunity and an intervention that can really change someone's life. And I think any time you have a pediatric well child visit that you don't address vaccines, you've really done your patients a disservice. Limitations of my study were the small sample size, and unfortunately, all of the women that I captured for my study were actively at some sort of health clinic. I would have loved to have been able to go directly out into the community and capture a more random, perhaps more representative sample of the entire community, but unfortunately I was limited by both human and financial resources. In the future, we're currently working with higher statistical analysis of the data to identify predictors of vaccine acceptability as well as vaccine completion. We are also combining this data with some data that was collected during some qualitative focus groups that we explored these themes a little bit further. And the thing that I'm most proud of so far, we did take a stab at sort of addressing some of those educational gaps that we identified. We put together a multimedia toolkit during my last few months in Panama that had various components. You can see here, these are members of the community pre-testing a folleto, which is a pamphlet that I put together. And these are the various parts of the toolkit. So we put together, it had two charlas, which are like talks or lectures that can be given. These were designed for use by the promotores de salud, which are the community health promoters. So we had one charla about cervical cancer, and then one charla about human papillomavirus. We also created two pamphlets to go with each of the charlas. We created an interactive game called Mito o Realidad, which is myth or reality, and we took the top 10 most common myths and misconceptions that we had heard among the community and made it a game with red cards for myth and green cards for reality, to really engage the community in these sessions and have them vote and talk about which of these are true and which of these are false. And then finally, we incorporated a wonderful telenovela video that was created by my mentors at Los Angeles that uses storytelling to teach women about cervical cancer. And then this is a picture of me distributing our kits to the president of UNSEC. We distributed over 80 toolkits between the Ministry of Health, the National Cancer Society, and APLAFA, which is the Planned Parenthood affiliate I mentioned earlier. I also presented our preliminary data to community stakeholders at the Gorgas Institute, which is a scientific institute in Panama. Did some work with APLAFA, and then we published those same 10 myths in the national newspaper. They had a myths column that every week they go through 10 myths about something. So we covered those there as well. And then I did a little couple presentations at my medical school. And these are my sources. And I'd also like to thank the University of South Florida, which was my home away from home while I was in Panama. Even though I am a USC student, they really treated me and took me in as one of their own and really helped me survive in a new country, in a new language. So I'm forever grateful. Thank you very much.